Hi, I'm Kelly Corrigan. You've probably never heard of me. Maybe you did. I wrote some New York Times bestsellers. I gave a TED Talk. But the reason I'm in your ear now is to invite you to listen to Kelly Corrigan Wonders. We talk to everyone from Bono to Amy Schumer, Spike Lee to Rainn Wilson, Krista Tippett and Bryan Stevenson about purpose, creativity, well-being, and what makes life worth living. Follow and listen to Kelly Corrigan Wonders on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This time of year, a good hoodie is absolutely essential. And the American Giant Classic Full Zip Hoodie is made to last a lifetime. With timeless style, heavyweight fleece, and durable details, you can depend on it for years to come. Snag the hoodie that will bring you comfort for life. The American Giant Classic Full Zip. And save 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com when you use code CLASSIC24 at checkout. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com, code CLASSIC24.
Billy is here. Scheduling purposes, it worked better today. His club taking on the St. Louis Blues tonight. Would you like a bold declaration of advice from me to you about your team? Are you prepared for it?
Yes.
Are you sitting down? Are you sitting down?
Close enough.
If your team would win 5 out of every 6 games for as long as you're the president of hockey operations, would you accept that? Would you be pleased with that? Would that be great if you would win?
I would take that.
Okay.
I would take that. Yes.
You have done that without Kirill Kaprizov. I think you should cut him as a statement to your players to say, I believe in you. Kirill has been holding us back. What are your thoughts on your initial reaction to my idea?
My thoughts are that we would not be doing this radio segment very long if I did that. This would come to a quick stop.
You, in other words, you could call into the show.
Yeah, exactly.
You could still do the segment.
Yeah, you could still do the segment. Yeah. We'd have to change the open. The former president of hockey operations.
100%.
Yes.
100%.
I want to get to Kirill and his health in a little bit, but how do you feel about how your team has played without him? It's not easy to rally without a guy who, I mean, many people thought was the leading contender for the Hart Trophy, MVP in the league, and the way your team has responded without your best player.
Yeah, I mean, I'm really proud of these guys. I think they've responded really well. They've played, as a team. They continue to do the right things, and I think, it just shows that, when we're full, we can be a very good team. We're doing this without Grill, without Spurge, without Lauko, without Middleton. If we continue to do these things when the guys get back, that will be even better.
Without Kirill in particular, does the team have to adjust any different, or is it just the further emphasis of playing the right way?
I think it's further emphasis on playing the right way and just what you need even more than that is depth scoring and for guys to, be chipping in and other guys just, kind of pick up the slack, in the goal scoring department. We've gotten that. You look at what Marco's done in the last couple of weeks. He's really played really well, and he's produced, and that's something that we've really needed.
Let's talk about Marco. This is only his second year. It seems like to a lot of us, if we're paying attention, it feels like he's been around more. But we had COVID, we had his health year, we had the heart issue, and we also the commitment of the guy when he stayed here in town as opposed to heading back to Austria, even missing his sister's wedding, the commitment. But the fact that last week in the league, he was named the number one star with 3 goals and 5 assists. Obviously, you thought highly of him, but has he even exceeded your expectations?
Yeah, he has this year. But I guess it shouldn't be that way because if you look at Marco's track record, all those things that you mentioned, okay, the crazy COVID years, his health, all those things, even with that, though, he has managed to improve every single year. And I think that's, I mean, for me anyways, that's a really nice sign. That's a good trajectory. And so I shouldn't be surprised. I love the way he's getting his points and his goals because, you know, being one of the smaller guys on our team, mm-hmm. he happens to spend more time in front of the other team's net than anybody else. And that's why he's getting it. He's willing to go to the ugly areas. And, you know, Marco's a tough kid. He's mentally tough, mentally yep. strong, and he's battled through a lot in his young career. And, you know, I guess I really shouldn't be surprised, but it's nice to see.
Well, I remember a couple of conversations we had a few years ago, Marco, and I think you used the exact same phrase. You said he is going to have to make the commitment to go to the ugly areas, that for him to flourish at this level. And when I watch you, I mean, listen, the courage, all sorts of players show. But the fact that he does it impresses me so much. And then a lot of times when they show the footage after a win and they're honoring one of the players, he's underrated strong, man. I mean, I saw him the other day and I'm thinking, sometimes I see Marco just on ice in uniform and I don't realize how wiry tough he is. And so if he's willing to go there and then has that skill set, that's why he's producing at this type of level.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, look, the puck has to get to the front of the net eventually for it to go in.
Yep.
You might as well be standing there to tip it or tap it in or get a rebound or something. He's strong enough now, and he's got enough edge to his game where he can push back. He doesn't, you know, he's got more of an edge than you think. And, you know, honestly, and I've had a couple conversations with other players over the last, you know, 2 weeks or whatever, and they all bring Marco's name up of being kind of a little prick on the ice, and that's
good.
That's good.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Do you hit the beep button for that? Or no,
we held off. We've had to beep you before, and Dave's not eliminating that. We're not going to beep you again. You're probably the guest that we pay closest attention to it. Speaking of being a you-know-what in front of the goal, how many players take more abuse than Erickson Ek does across the entire league?
Not many.
I mean, they hate him.
Not many.
I mean, but he's a great player. But, man, if there was – I know Russo does a lot of those surveys where which player is most detested. Erickson Ek has to be on that list.
Yeah. He reminds me of my old teammate Bobby Holík. And – it was the same way. It's because he's a bull in a china shop, you know. Like he doesn't even realize that he's doing it. It just, that's why, like, when you see some of the scrums or you see guys like going at him, he's kind of got a look of confusion on his face, like, what are you doing? Like, right. Why would you do that? And it's just he's big and rangy and kind of heavy, and just when he bumps into you, you think he's like kind of doing it on purpose. And no, he's just bumping into you. Like, I remember back in Jersey, like, guys wanted to kill Bobby in practice because we all thought like, he's slew-footing me, he's this, he's that. No, he's not. He's just bumping into you, and he's right. That big. And it's, so he's the same way, but man, I love having him on our team.
Okay. Tell me about a practice fight that you got into. Does one come to mind?
Ooh. A practice fight that I got into. I can tell you one that I did not want to get into. That was with Scott Stevens.
Oh, he's a huge.
And we were going at it pretty good in front of the net, and we were both getting ticked off at each other. And he kind of looked at me, and I looked at him, and I was like, you know what? I think I'm just gonna go back and get in line.
That was a good choice.
I never really had like an actual in fight, but I have seen them. I saw Randy McKay and Claude Lemieux go at it. I saw Mike Peluso go after Val Zelopuk, and like it was different back then. But that's we practiced hard and we played hard.
Most of those were they from, and in this case, in the names you mentioned, these are feisty guys. Were they the guys you would expect would ever be, wait a second, you two are the finesse guys. What's going on, or was that pretty rare?
No, I mean, it happens all the time. It doesn't matter who it is. If you're competing in practice and you're just going, it doesn't really matter. And, one guy could just, he could just be having a bad day. Mm-hmm. You just don't know. It could be nothing that anybody did. It's just, that's the way it happened.
Let's pause. Let's put Billy on hold. We'll get an update on some injuries and some guys who might be coming back very soon. I want to get Billy's thoughts on Marc-Andre Fleury and Alex Ovechkin and what happened last week, and considering their history and Billy's history in Pittsburgh, what that was like to watch. Remind you, the Wild are playing well again, and they take on the St. Louis Blues tonight. This man, the guy in charge, Billy Guerin, joins us every other week throughout the season. We're back with Mr. Guerin in moments on News Talk 830 WCCO.
Work takes up most of your time. That's why you should use Stamps.com to save time with your mailing and shipping, and have flexibility to focus on more important things. Stamps.com can handle all your mailing and shipping needs, with rates up to 88% off USPS and UPS. Add flexibility to your day with Stamps.com. Go to Stamps.com/program to sign up for a special offer. No contract, cancel anytime. That's Stamps.com/program.
If you want to squeeze in a question for Bill Guerin through a text, you can. 651-461-9226. I'm going to run you over with the car later today, Dave Herrick. And I just,
okay, 18.
Yeah, I'm gonna crush you. Okay, John Hines telling the media in the last couple hours, Jake Middleton's return is imminent. Does that mean he's playing tonight?
What did John say?
Imminent.
Then it's imminent.
Okay. I'm trying to push it a little further, William. I mean, imminent to me, Dave Harrigan, if I was the president of hockey operations, first of all, he knows. We know he knows. He's just not telling us. Mm-hmm. Imminent would mean he's playing tonight. Wouldn't you suspect that, Dave?
I wouldn't exactly jump to that conclusion, okay. Chad. I'd say it's imminent.
Okay, thanks a lot. I needed two of you in this conversation. Thanks a lot.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot. So you're not going to let me know if Jake Middleton is playing tonight. Is that what I'm surmising here?
I'm not going to let you. I'm not. No, it is. What our head coach said, imminent.
Okay. Put it down. Bill Guerin says he's playing tonight. Okay, we'll put that down. What can you tell us about Kirill and Spurgeon?
Both progressing nicely. I think we could see Kirill sooner than later. I think we could. I think Spurge still considered week to week, but I think Kirill is making very good headway towards a return.
Kirill is not skating yet, correct? I believe I saw that couple reports. When he starts to skate, about how many days does he have to start skating, knowing his skill set, knowing his conditioning, before him to play again?
Plague?
Yeah, it's like, does he need to skate for 3-4 days? Does he need to be skating for a week? You know, with this type of injury he's dealing with, without being too specific on the injury.
Not many.
Okay.
No.
When Spurgeon goes down, what was your reaction to the reason why he went down? And what did you think about his injury at that time?
Oh, man, get that bleep button ready.
Yeah.
No, I was mad. I was mad. It was a dirty play by a dirty player. And it's just unfortunate. But you know what? In the end, you let the emotions run, and then you calm down and you move on. And Spurge is much better off than we thought he was going to be. And we just take that as a positive, and just, you know what, it's behind us now. We'll just do we have to do to move on?
So, obviously, you know this sport infinity better than me. But I watched that, and right away, you nailed it. Dirty play. I didn't know the guy's history. Then he said suspension after suspension after suspension. And I just thought the league was too soft. When it's a clear intent to injure, Billy, I don't get why it isn't 10, 15, 20 games. I just don't get that. There's so many great aspects of your sport and your game. I don't care if he's your captain, which he is in this case, or he's a fourth line guy. That was a play to hurt a guy.
Yep. Look, the league does is they have a system. They go through protocols that they believe work, and we, you know, for the most, we support them, and we don't always have to agree with them. But look, when these things happen, we do what we can, and then we leave it in their hands, and it doesn't do us any good to fight it or to complain about it or anything like that. We really have to move on, because if you let it just sit there and eat you up, that's exactly what it will do, is eat you up, and you just hey, look, we're protective over our players. We're emotional because these are players that we see day in and day out. We know them. We know their families. We have great relationships with them. And that's the benefit, or I think it's necessary in the job that goes on at the league, is that they are emotionally detached from it. And they look at it as a pure hockey situation. And that's what helps them make their decisions. So, and then we just live with it, you know, like, cause we all go by the same rules.
From your days playing in Pittsburgh to assistant general manager, you've watched Marc-Andre Fleury close up. You've won cups with him. You also know the brilliance of Alex Ovechkin. You know the history between those two franchises, those two players. You saw it from different perspectives. What was it like watching those two guys go head-to-head last week when Ovechkin scores a goal, but then Flower stops him in the shootout? Just two legends of the game matching up from one of the last times, if not the last time.
Yeah, it was awesome. It was incredible. I mean, honestly, the roof was coming off the place. It was a great atmosphere in Washington that night. And just to have those two guys who have, like you said, face off against each other so many times. I mean, honestly, for me, it was flashbacks to 2009 where we were playing game 7 in that building, and Ovi came down on a partial breakaway and Flower robbed him with a glove save. And that really set us up for a win in that game. It was a huge moment. And then just to fast forward, you know, 15 years or whatever it's been, and
yeah,
you know, they're both winding down their careers, but to have that moment against each other together, I just thought it was a really cool moment for the game.
I was telling this to my friend Adam Carter that you live it every day, right? Because of Fleury. I sometimes think in this town, the casual sports fan doesn't quite get how unique it is to have Fleury here, considering where he's going to end up on the all-time goalie list, and to have him still playing as well as he has. So people need to appreciate it. We've talked before about all the great players you've played against, but when you think about the games you played against Ovechkin, and the physical force he is, the goal-scoring force he is, setting up where he sets up every damn power play and where he wants to set up if they have control of it in the offensive end, what stands out most about battling him and just observing him?
I mean, my God, like, he's just been – like, honestly, it's like Sid, like, consistently great. He's been consistently great and doing what he does every single year. And when you think he's, you know, there have been a couple times over his career, obviously it's a long career, like oh man, he's slowing down. He's slowing down.
Yeah.
You know, before he hurt his leg this year, he was leading the league in goals.
Yes.
He's 39. Like,
right.
And I personally never thought Wayne's record would be broken, the goal scoring.
Yep.
And
it's happening.
I mean, honestly, like, it's going to happen.
Yep.
And, you know, Wes Wall said it the other day, and I honestly, how long is he going to keep playing? Can he push 1,000?
Yeah.
Like, seriously.
Right.
Like, he's not, with his ability and his drive, is that really too far-fetched? And he's been amazing.
I watched.
He really has.
They were on national TV against the Rangers on Sunday, and I watched about half the game, and you're like, he's the best player on the ice. I mean, he's the guy who's still drawing the most attention. So why not? You know, it's, you know, when you have him or you have LeBron and you have these guys, when Brady, who are just all timers, but then take such great care of themselves and still can be this great, we should never ever take it for granted. One last thing.
No.
You signed a goaltender today. Tell me about who you signed.
Yeah, well, I mean, to be quite honest with you, we were down on the number of goalies that we had on NHL contracts, and Dylan's been playing great in Iowa. You know, Wally's been a little bit banged up lately. So in order to protect ourselves, we need another guy that we could possibly call up. And he's come in on an American League hockey deal and just been fantastic for us. And he's earned the right to have an NHL deal. It's good for him. It's good for us. And, these are, you know, it's just one of those things that just works.
Great stuff as always, sir. Travel safe. We'll talk soon.
All right. Thank you. See you, Chad.
Bill Guerin. He's tremendous with us. Yesterday we chatted with someone who might be the Speaker of the House. She might be co-Speaker of the House. Today, we're going to talk with somebody who might be Speaker of the House. She might be co-Speaker of the House. She might not be Speaker of the House. Yesterday was Lisa Daymuth, the Republican. Today, it's Melissa Hortman. They have very different views about what's going to happen next week in St. Paul. Melissa Hortman, next on CCO. We have conflicting views on what should or what will happen with the Minnesota House of Representatives. The legislative session expected to begin 1 week from today. Yesterday, 2:35, right, Dave? We chatted.
Yes, it was.
With Lisa Daymuth, who would like to be Speaker. Maybe she's co-Speaker. And she gave her views and was highly critical of the Democrats, including Melissa Hortman, who was the Speaker last year, would like to be the Speaker again, maybe even as the co-Speaker. They have incredibly different views on what is happening, whether 67-66, eventually 67-67 if it happens. We're still waiting on the Tabke results. And among the comments Melissa Hortman has made in response to what Daymuth and the Republicans have suggested is maybe we won't show. So Melissa Hortman is here. She's on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline. Melissa, thanks for coming back on the show. I appreciate the visit. Can you tell us, 1 week away, if nothing changes legally, if you plan on showing up with your fellow Democrats next week?
Well, 1 week is an eternity in the legislative session, and you can kind of think about the end of session when we're negotiating a big budget a week out. You have kind of the warring press conferences. I got along great with Senator Paul Gazelka, but, you know, we had those moments where we go in front of the cameras and present our alternate points of view. Usually you have a little conflict before you get to resolution, and that's the stage we're in.
Okay, if the legislative session started today, would you show up?
Well, we really think we need to have a power-sharing agreement. We've got a few different parliamentary tactics that we could use to delay proceedings. One of them is denying quorum. One of them is filibuster. I think you've seen that used to great extent here in Minnesota recently. You know, we haven't ruled anything out. Everything's on the table. But our preference is a power-sharing agreement. Minnesotans delivered a tie. And Minnesotans expect us to work together on a bipartisan basis. We actually need each other. Not only do we need each other to convene, but we need each other to pass bills. Nobody can pass a bill with 67 votes. So the collaboration should really start at the outset. I think we, Leader Damuth and I, came up with a very good power-sharing model where we have bipartisan co-chairs, equal numbers of members on committees, and we sort of force everybody, decentralized, you know, all of the members, to work together starting the first day of session.
Melissa, I was here election night, and as the votes were coming in, it looked like there was a tie, and it appeared there was a tie. And then let's just be honest. Curtis Johnson lied about living and being eligible for his seat. I mean, he won decisively, but he wasn't eligible. So right now it's 67-66. So why shouldn't the Republicans feel like, hey, we have the majority right now by one until we get a legal ruling on the election and when that election takes place and whoever wins that, even though the chances are very, very strong Democrats going to win, that at this point we are the majority by one.
Have an argument that maybe the first 3 weeks of the session could look different, but when we get back to 67-67, we've got to be working together. And Leader Damuth herself said to media outlets that when we get back to a tie, we'll go back to the power sharing agreement. And so we just want her to honor her word, put that in writing so we can count on it, and we can get underway. It seemed logical to me that, you know, in the moment when we're tied and we have to work together, that we put back in place the power sharing agreement that we agreed to. If it was the right thing to do from November 5th to January 5th, it doesn't stop being the right thing to do just because they have a two-week plurality. It doesn't mean that they should be have some sort of status for 2 years when they're not actually a majority. They cannot do anything, including convene the chamber,
okay,
including
so
pass a bill.
So let's make some news here. If Lisa Damuth confirms that if a Democrat wins the disputed seat, and Curtis Johnson won it by close to 30 points, if a Democrat wins and is back to 67-67, you'll go back to the sharing agreement, the equal responsibilities. But until that happens, you will acknowledge and defer to the Republicans having the majority in the House and accept that.
They certainly should make that as an offer. I made an offer on Sunday when we met at 1 p.m. Representative Damuth said that she didn't anticipate making a counteroffer. She walked away from the negotiating table. If they think those first 3 weeks of session should look different because they have a plurality, they have a one-seat edge, lay it out. Show us what you think it should be. But we've got to have assurances that when we get back to 67-67, we go to power sharing, because it doesn't make any sense to have a two-year power agreement or power situation based on a two-week set of time.
Okay. I think most people would agree with that. So if whenever this election happens, because there's some contention, you know this legally, if the governor called it too soon, right? But if it goes 67-67, the Republicans should not have be in the majority the entire time.
It's math, right?
Yeah. Just like it's math.
67, it's a priority. You know, the thing that's so interesting is that Leader Damuth and I talked a lot about during the negotiations is you tend to think that half is like a majority, but half is not a majority.
Yeah, I agree. Tiority, by the way, that's a new one for me. I might try to work that one in. Tiority.
Well, Leader Damuth came up with that. Yeah. I thought it was pretty good.
Dave, can we work that one in? Tiority.
I do that.
We all invent words. I'm a master at it. Tiority. I agree with you on the math, just like the math to me at this point is 67-66. That's why I think you guys have to show up. I think it would be a horrible message, whether Republicans or Democrats, to say, well, we really think it should be this priority, and unless you agree with us, we're not going to show up. That's your responsibility to show up.
Yeah, denying quorum is a parliamentary tactic that legislatures all over the country have used. Abraham Lincoln used it when he was an Illinois state senator. He went to the Capitol building. He showed up. He said, hey, guys, we're not going to come. We're denying you quorum. And then he tried to jump out a window, and they're like, no, you're already in the building. They locked the doors, and they said a quorum is present because you decided to show up. You know, the Oregon Republicans did it in opposition to climate change legislation. The Senate Democrats in Wisconsin did it to oppose changes to union laws. It's been used in other states. It's part of the legislative process.
Did any of those individuals, including Abe Lincoln, threaten to do this because one of their fellow Democrats or Republicans, depending on the case, in this case Democrats, lied about where they lived? I mean, the other ones are on a principle of a position. This is someone who lied to his voters.
Yeah, the principle that we have here is the will of the voters is a tie. And, you know, as you said yourself, when we go back to 67-67, the average Minnesotan is like, okay, yeah, you're tied. You should share power. That's what we sent. That's what we voted for. And we're asking Republicans to respect that and, you know, go into the power sharing agreement. What they want to do is they want to take this 2-week time period. They want to kick out one of our duly elected members, regardless of what the courts say, even though it was proven in court beyond a reasonable doubt that he won that election. He obviously had no control over what the city clerk in Shakopee did with ballots, and it was not enough to make a difference. We know conclusively that Brad Tabke won that election.
Why do you know conclusively? Hold on a second.
Because there were 20 ballots right. missing.
Yeah, we know
and
that.
And the elections officials know exactly the 20 ballots belonged to,
right.
and 12 of those people testified, and mathematically, since 6 of them testified they voted for Brad Tabke, Aaron Paul can't win. He would have had to get 18 of the 20 votes, and he can't get to 18. We've got 6 on our side.
Right,
so
but don't, we're
really
still waiting on that judicial decision, though, correct?
We're still waiting on that, but what they have said
that's conclusive.
Is
isn't it conclusive, though, when we get the judicial decision?
Right. Why they want to take advantage of this 2-week period is they want to kick him out. And, you know, part of the reason that we're, you know, contemplating our options is we think that's wrong. We think when the voters decided an election, 21,000 people voted, that you don't throw it away just because you opportunistically want to create an opportunity for yourself to have a do-over when you lost.
Melissa Hortman is with us, and I really appreciate her answering my questions, making herself available. She's the former speaker. Maybe she's the future speaker. Maybe she's the co-speaker. So this is another thing. I get it. I follow that case closely. You're exactly right. People testifying that they voted for Tabke. It seems inevitable. I still think we need the court ruling myself, but I clearly hear your point, and it's very valid. So again, back to Damoth. If they agree that as long as they have this 67-66 power that they have by one, that they're going to follow the court's ruling. And if the court rules that Brad Tabke is the winner, then they can't kick him out.
Well, we would really love to be at the negotiating table with them to talk about how all these issues could play out, because I think it is resolvable. Just like the state budget at the end of session, you know, we come out with the Republican point of view and the Democratic point of view, and we've got to resolve that to get one budget that we can enact for the state. The only way that you get that done, though, is you meet and you talk about what about this or what about that. We could live with this for a few weeks. We could live with that for a few weeks. When you walk away from the negotiating table, then we are left with only a few options, which are these parliamentary tactics that we have, filibuster, denying quorum, procedural motions.
Are you continuing on that if you reached out to Lisa Damoth, because we talked to her yesterday, that she's just not returning your calls and won't meet with you at this point?
I made an offer on Sunday, and so I would happily entertain a counteroffer. I think it would be great if they put a counteroffer together.
So they, at least at this point, there is no legitimate counteroffer despite her media appearances or, and again, I appreciate both you coming on, that your willingness to talk to us, but not a face-to-face sort of response to your offer has not happened.
We don't have anything planned at this moment, and she indicated she didn't anticipate making a counteroffer. Hopefully she will. I mean, we're all, of course, waiting for the decision in the Tab case.
Yep.
That, you know, getting that decision would allow us to bring our conversations with each other to a close.
Last thing, and I'll let you go because I know you're busy. For folks, and they're Republicans, who say DFL leadership knew for months that Curtis Johnson was not eligible to vote and that they should have stepped in and no one should be surprised that eventually he was ruled ineligible. What do you say to that?
That's just wrong. We have procedures that we put in place to confirm that people live in the district they're running in. We make them fill out a form. We run criminal background checks on all of our candidates. We look at all their judgments, and we take a look at their driver's license and what is the address on their driver's license, because we did have a member a few years ago that caused a little kerfuffle with not having a driver's license address in their district. So we put these procedures into place. We don't put ankle bracelets on people. You know, every piece of information we had was that he was qualified to run in that district. And, you know, he disagrees with the view of the trial court. I wasn't there in court. I don't know what all the testimony was. The trial court made a finding, issued a decision. Curtis Johnson disagreed with that decision, but he did ultimately decide to forego his appeal and to forego his election contest in the House.
One more thing, because I was reminded of this. Carrie Dedzic tragically passes away. I know you had immense respect for her, and my sympathies. Interview Carrie a number of times. It's very sad. It's way too soon. The power of cancer, in particular ovarian cancer, is cruel. So now we're going to have a race there. Media reporting in the last couple of days that a gentleman named Mohamed Jama, who is a potential top contender for that seat, who's already filled out the process to try to win that race and replace her, that he doesn't live in the district. Is this becoming an issue with more people who don't live in a district?
Well, let me first say that Senator Dedzic was a better person than most of the people who serve in elected office. She was absolutely the best of us and one of the finest people to ever do this work, and deeply respected by both Republicans and Democrats, and we are going to miss her. It's absolutely heartbreaking. I think, you know, that will be a factor in the campaigns over there. Certainly somebody should follow the procedure and file a case to get that person kicked off the ballot. There is a procedure in Minnesota law to kick somebody off the ballot, and there's a procedure that should be followed there.
Melissa, thank you for the extended visit. We'll be paying close attention. I appreciate it. We'll talk soon.
Have a great day.
Melissa Hortman, answering all our questions. You can listen to that if you join halfway through. You can podcast it, Chad Hartman Show, or you could go to our conversation with Lisa Damoth yesterday at 2:35. So the two versions, you heard it. They're going to show.
Seems that way.
They're going to show. They should talk.
Yep.
They should agree that whenever that election is held, I mean, we're waiting on a lot of rulings here. We're waiting on the Tapke election ruling. Then we're waiting on did the governor step in on this, the Johnson seat to replace that, even though he never. He spent as much time representing them as I did. Okay. And he stepped down before he even had the seat. It seemed a little odd to me that you announced there's going to be a special election. You have until 5 o'clock the next day, and it's a holiday week, and they're trying to time this up with the other election. Just agree that for 3 weeks, that or 4 weeks, whatever it turns out to be, the Republicans are in charge. Whatever they can get passed then, that's on them. But once it's 67-67, you go back to the agreement. Is that tough?
It doesn't seem like a very difficult compromise to come to.
Yeah, seems pretty good to me. You want to react, you can. 651-461-9226. Honestly. Were there any songs the last hour? Just 18. 18.
Mm-mm, no.
Just. Thank you. Thank you.
Congratulations again.
Oh, God, it's tremendous. I mean, it's the thrill. You know, some people, you know, until today I thought the birth of Hunter was the greatest day of my life.
Sure.
Now 18th.
Yeah. It's one better than 19th.
It's one better. Yes. Woo! What a day. Let's read a lot of texts, and I appreciate the compliments on the interview. And credit to her. Credit both of them.
Yes.
They came on. They answered. We sparred a little bit.
And they both came out firing.
Yeah, they were ready. What a novel concept. People willing to answer questions. Closed circuit. Can we go through the list? How about like some of the, like Stauber comes on with us occasionally. Brett Finstick came on with us. Blois set that up election night. He's like, wow, what a thrill this is to be on with you guys. I'm like, hey, great. We can have Brett Finstick on. What's happened since?
Not a lot.
Tom Emmer won't come on since he had the audacity And I've known the guy for 40 years. I know when he's BSing me. It was one of those days when the president, soon to be future president, basically said it's okay to eat children alive. You know, some crazy thing. We did a 15-minute interview. And at the end, I didn't bring up the start. At the end, I go, Tom, what do you want to react to what? Oh, I've just been so busy. I'm like, come on. What do you want to say?
Well, to be fair, that was one of those Trump tweets that, you know, like many, underreported, never really saw the light of day. You're asking about something that was on page, you know, 8G in the...
We're going to go there again with the crazy... Not familiar with that. let's see. The Republicans... Let's go 50-50. The Republicans have the majority. They should have control. If when they don't have leadership, that should change. Technically, the election isn't over. It's simple. 67-66... Have an agreement that will go back to our agreement once it's or if it's 67-67.
Just follow the numbers. It's not that hard. If they have more, they're the leaders. If they don't, they're the leaders or it's a tie.
The Roseville guy tried to cheat. It really should go to the person with the next highest votes. We kept Melissa Orman a long time. I'm still on the record. I don't think the Democrats should be allowed to run in the race. Their party, their representative cheated the voters. I don't think they should be allowed to put somebody in, but so far it's not working out that way. Refuse to work, no pay. Hell yeah, for me. I forget the name of one of the leaders in Wisconsin in 2011, Dave, when they were hiding wherever.
Abe Lincoln?
It was not Abe Lincoln. I did not realize Abe Lincoln was going to be brought in the story. And yes, was I tempted to say... I knew of Abe Lincoln. I was friends with Abe Lincoln. You're no Abe Lincoln. Oh, I was very tempted. I decided to do a better part of valor, you know. No. Both sides are like little children fighting over toys. More text. Dirty politics, as always. It's okay that one of your party lied. That's talking about Hortman reacting to the Johnson situation. Mm-hmm. And it is funny. When all of a sudden the people voted for all this. When Republicans at the congressional level and now the Democrats are saying this. I better stop talking. We're already late.